we are joined in by the head of delegation for ICRC South Sudan, James Reynolds, and Secretary General for the South Sudan Red Cross, John Lobor, to bring us to speed. Good morning, gentlemen, and it's good to have you this morning.
Good morning to you.
Right.
Good morning.
Yes, so just tell us a little more about the key role that the Red Cross will be playing in this COVID-19 fight.
Well, I think what's been really positive so far is the South Sudan Red Cross has mobilized about 1,400 volunteers here in Juba, but all around the country in its different branches and units. And they've spent the last few days, you know, moving out into communities and explaining to people the challenges that the disease faces to presents to communities,
right,
and going through the very simple measures they can take to try to slow down or prevent the spread of the disease.
Right. Now, also tell us more about the initiative that brought together 1,400 volunteers.
As you know, the South Sudan Red Cross is a volunteer-based organizations, and normally in the event of a crisis like this, we have a preparedness plan whereby in anticipation of a breakout of COVID-19, we have to mobilize volunteers, train them, equip them, and based on our preparedness plan, we had to start what we call the social mobilization and risky communication and community engagement by sending the volunteers into the communities, doing house-to-house visits. But we have also deployed about 15 vehicles across the country in our main branches that are going out with the megaphones to send the specific key messages that have been developed by the Technical Minister of Health and the WHO, which people are supposed to adhere to and follow so as to reduce the risk of COVID-19 within our communities.
Right. Just as you say that you teach and equip these volunteers, have they already been sent out there?
Oh, yes. We have, as I speak now, out of the 1,400, 700 of them have already been trained. They are already active in the field. And the training is ongoing in some of the remote areas that we still have not reached. But at the end of the day, we expect that out of the 58 locations that we want to operationalize, all the 1,400 volunteers will be able to be actioned. But at the moment, 700 of them are actively working in 29 locations.
Right. Now, James, was it critical at this moment that awareness be intensified nationwide?
I think it certainly is. We have a moment, I guess, where we can, if we act quickly and across the country as a whole, I think we can slow the spread of the disease. Unfortunately, it's already with us here in South Sudan. But I think the more people become quickly aware and the more they can adopt very quickly hand washing, social distancing, and those other kind of measures that will make them less likely to catch the disease from somebody, less likely to pass it on to somebody else.
Right.
The fewer people in the country will be affected.
Right.
So I think it is a kind of a window of opportunity to really make the impact keep the impact as small as possible.
Right, and I mean that's what everybody is looking at, containing the impact of the disease. Now, coming from a background that South Sudan has four ventilators, and actually the world is worried about South Sudan at this point. What is your trajectory as Red Cross in the near future on this?
I mean, I think we've seen in, you know, many countries around the world, in Asia, in Europe, in America, which have, you know, very, very advanced health systems, they've struggled immensely. I think they would be the first to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, in South Sudan, the health system is okay, but it's not amazing. So I think we need to be very... we need to make a big effort on this preventive effort to slow down the spread of the disease, because I think we have to be clear that it will be very difficult to do case management and take for all of the cases that develop into serious or critical phases of the disease.
Right.
It will be very difficult to provide them with the best possible care, simply, as you say, because there's a limited number of relevant equipment in the country. For the critical cases, I guess you need the ventilator, which is there really are very few of them in the country.
Right.
For the more serious cases, can be dealt with you know, oxygen concentration. There are some, you know, some facilities there. There's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, the advice from the national and international health authorities really is for people with mild cases to self-isolate and stay at home and avoid spreading the disease to others.
Right.
The challenge, I think, of this particular disease is it's not necessarily that the mortality rate is not necessarily very, very high. The great majority of people in other countries have survived.
Right, yes.
But it is a very infectious disease, so you can spread it to many other people
right.
very quickly. So
right.
there need to be really careful
right.
in that regard.
So the advice here is do not go to the hospital unless you're critically ill.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So in you had a press release and you mentioned that ICRC is putting infection prevention and control measures in place in 3 hospitals and 36 primary health care centers. Just bring us more to speed on this.
I think they're basically, I mean, ICRC for a long period now across different parts of the country has run some standalone health facilities and many others that are state health facilities that we support
mm-hmm.
with medical supplies, with training, with incentive payments. So really, I think what's absolutely essential with, you know, the rainy season will be with us in a month or two. And then, you know, every year one gets an increase in malaria cases.
Right.
So maintaining those health systems, and not just our ones, but, you know, across the country as a mm-hmm. whole, maintaining the basic health structures is really important, because otherwise you're just going to get more people getting sick and being unable to get treatment for the regular diseases, malaria, diarrhea, that hit people
right.
every year.
Right.
So really important that those centres can remain functional. And that means 2 things. One, to sort of prevent infection spreading through those systems. But 2, also to give the personal protective equipment and the means and the confidence to health workers
right.
in primary health centres, in mm-hmm. hospitals all around the country, that they are going to be able to do their job safely and effectively.
Right. And have these are these centres already functioning? If yes, just name a few of them.
I mean, the hospitals, we have a surgical team here at the Juba Military Hospital, and we have a lot of another one in Ganiel in Unity, a hospital in Akobo, and then a lot of smaller primary health centres in Bahar al-Ghazal, Unity, Apanal, Jonglei, as well as Central Equatoria, Ye Hospital, for example.
Right.
As well.
And in this fight against COVID-19, has ICRC been able to reach out to those in prisons or detentions?
We have, I mean, a long-standing partnership with the National Prison Services of South Sudan, where we, you know, we visit prisons, we look at the treatment and conditions there. And with the onset of the pandemic, we've had, you know, intensified that dialogue with the prison authorities to say, well, you know, you've got a large numbers of people living,
together.
By definition, in a confined space.
Right.
So we've had very positive, I think, talks with them. I think 2 or 3 things come out of that. One, to put in place already a couple of weeks ago, again, infection prevention and control measures. So hand washing points at the entrance, within the prison, and all those kinds of measures. The prison authorities took the decision, probably a wise decision, to say family visits won't be permitted in this phase. So instead, we've provided phones with some credits
right.
so that prisoners can keep in touch with their families without having the physical contact.
Right.
So I think in a lot of these prisons, the protection of civilian sites in the country, but also just the sort of high density, low income parts of Juba and other urban areas in the city, you've got a lot of people living in where you know social distancing is difficult. So really to try and find ways to enable people to protect themselves
right.
and others in their community.
Right.
It's not easy.
Yeah, of course it's not easy. Now, John, is there anything else you'd like to add on that I could have not asked?
Well, I think what I would like to stress here is that, of course, this pandemic is not the first one to affect the world, and it will not be the last. But what is important is that the population have really followed the guidelines as recommended by WHO and the Minister of Health. For example, the question of physical or social distancing, regularly washing your hands, and that's one. Number two, when you cough, this means you need to cover your hands with the tissues.
Right.
And those measures, I think if we are going to keep them strictly as much as possible,
mm-hmm.
we will be able to contain this disease. So I would advise that people really are there and follow those regulations very, very strictly. Of course, wearing of masks, this can only become when necessary, because I think from medical experts, it's only people that probably have been infected, or those who are working in hospitals and so on that are required to wear these masks from time to time. But if you are not infected, that may not be really necessary. So my recommendation is that we really need to follow the guidelines as put up by the Technical Minister of Health, WHO, and these are the messages that our volunteers are continuing to pass within the communities.
Right. Thank you so much, John. Now, James, far from the coronavirus, what other activities is ICRC engaged in the past 2 months at least?
Mm-hmm. I think one big area, we know the country faces quite a lot of challenges of food insecurity. So one major activity we've been carrying out at present is the distributions of seeds and tools to farming communities, again, pretty much across most of the country. So sorghum or maize, beans, vegetable seeds.
Right.
The idea being to enable people to produce food for themselves. So, the challenge has been to get those seeds out now in order that people can plant before the rains arrive in May and June. So it's a challenge. I mean, obviously, the logistical challenges are quite difficult to get seeds to up to kind of Raja in the far northwest of the country, in Equatoria, and, you know, sending by truck convoy, by boats. And the other challenge, obviously, with the onset of the COVID-19 issue, is we've been organizing those distributions slightly differently so as to enable people collecting seeds to do so safely.
Right.
So, you know, queuing in a very orderly manner, spacing themselves, and perhaps instead of doing a distribution just in one day, taking 2 or 3 days, just so that there's fewer numbers of people all at one point at the same time. So that's an important thing. I think again, the country, we've seen the revitalized peace agreement move to a new step now with the formation of transitional government and the move from pre-transition to transition. So obviously we hope those things will. The consolidation of peace will give an opportunity for acute humanitarian needs around the country to diminish.
Right.
It's pretty bad luck, I guess, that positive step has now kind of coincided with the COVID issue, which does sort of slow things down and bring a bit of uncertainty. But certainly, I mean, for the ICRC, working closely with partners across the country, the South Sudan Red Cross being the first and foremost of those, we hope we can, still continue addressing those humanitarian needs and accompany the country towards a sort of more
right.
a path of normalcy.
Mm-hmm. Right. James and John, thank you so much for making our time to come and speak to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.